All right, today is Thursday, April 26, 2012. My name is Melissa Burlock, and I'm a public history graduate student at IUPUI. I will be interviewing Mr. Lavester Hobbs. In 1990, Mr. Hobbs worked part-time in Fall Creek's Youth Department, and in 1991, he was promoted to Residence Hall Director. He was also the acting executive director of the Fall Creek Branch between 2000 and 2003. So is this information correct?
Correct.
Okay. He is currently the Building Services Director at the Jordan YMCA Branch, and we are going to talk about his executive directorship of the Fall Creek Parkway YMCA Branch. This interview is part of the Fall Creek History Project. The project supervisor is Dr. Philip Scarpino, who is a history professor and director of the Graduate Public History Program at IUPUI. Mr. Hobbs, I would like to ask your permission to do three things. Number one, to record this interview. Number two, to have the interview transcribed if we have the budget to do so. And number three, to place the recording and the transcription in the IUPUI Archives and Special Collections and the YMCA of Greater Indianapolis, where they may be used by a variety of researchers and other interested parties. So do I have your permission to do all three
things?
You have
my permission.
Okay. So in your pre-interview, we talked briefly about your role as residence hall and then branch director, as well as about why Fall Creek's membership enrollment had significantly declined by the 1990s. For the next 2 hours, I want to talk more about how the Fall Creek YMCA functioned under your leadership as residence hall director between 1991 and 2002, when the dormitories closed, and as acting executive director between 2000 and 2003, when Fall Creek closed. And we're going to be specifically talking about the following three documents. Number one is a message from the executive director letter dated December 4th, 1997. Number two is a 1999 Fall Creek Branch YMCA organizational study. And number three is your report for the YMCA of USA 2002 Executive Development Program titled Changing Communities, the Fall Creek Branch YMCA of Greater Indianapolis. All of the documents mentioned in this interview, such as statements, newspaper articles, statistical reports, correspondence, and contracts, are mainly from two repositories. Number one would be Room M in the English Foundation Building, and number two is IUPUI's Indianapolis Recorder Digital Collection. And it's also important to mention that I'll be using interchangeable abbreviations for the YMCA of Greater Indianapolis, including the Greater Indianapolis YMCA, IYMCA, the Metropolitan Association, and Metro. So just first of all, I just want to ask you a couple of questions, that way we can have the answers on record. So when and where were you born?
I was born in Wallace, North Carolina in 1961.
What was it like growing up in North Carolina?
Well, I was only there for about 4.5 years of my life, and then I moved here to Indianapolis. So I was basically raised here in Indianapolis.
Oh, okay. Did you like living here growing up?
Yes, I really, really like Indianapolis.
Where did you attend college?
First, Vincennes University in Vincennes, Indiana. I attended there for 2 years, and then I transferred to Indiana State in Terre Haute and went there for 3 years.
Okay. Were you the student body president at Vincennes?
In Vincennes, I was the president of the freshman class.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, in Vincennes.
Mm-hmm. So what did you major in?
Majored in business administration and a minor in political science.
Okay. Why that major?
Well, originally when I first went to college out of high school, I was looking at trying to look at corporate law, so I wanted the combination of both of them, but it didn't end up that way, and I ended up changing my interests as the years went by.
Right. So did you start, I guess you started being interested in nonprofit management or
more? Yes, and giving back to the youth in my community.
So after you graduated from college, what was your first job here?
First job was at the Charles T. Height Community Center in Terre Haute, Indiana, which was working with youth and, a program director there.
And were you involved with the Indiana Black Expo for any amount of time while you were here?
Yeah, and through Terre Haute, when the time I lived in Terre Haute and the first part of moving back here in 1990 into Indianapolis, I was part of that expo on the board of Indiana Black Expo.
Okay. So where else did you work before coming to Fall Creek in 91?
Where else did I work?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I worked at a for the Hike Center in Terre Haute. Then after that, for the last from I think like 88 to 90, I worked for the Upper Bound program, talent search program at Indiana State University. Okay. And then I came here, and then in 90, I took the job with Fall Creek.
Okay. So in the pre-interview, we talked about working part-time in Fall Creek's youth department starting off in 1990, like you said. Mm-hmm. So who hired you to work part-time?
Mr. Ralph Christian. He was the executive director at that time.
So why did you accept the position?
Because I had a lot of experience working with kids and working with the community at the Terre Haute, at the Charles T. Hike Community Center, and that was where my passion was. And it was an opportunity to give back to the community here in Indianapolis, which I was raised in. So it was a great opportunity that I just couldn't turn down.
So what did you hope to accomplish, I guess, giving back to the community? Did you have other goals you wanted to accomplish working at the youth department?
My goals were just to make a difference in a youth's life, like some of the people in dealing with when I was in the Boys Club and the Boy Scouts. And we had a mentor, a gentleman that had helped me, and I wanted to be, I wanted to give back to our youth as it was given to me when I was growing up.
So as, over the youth department or just working part-time with the youth department, what kind of activities did you oversee there with the youth?
We were in a basketball league, a youth basketball league there at the Fall Creek. We had a junior teenage club that overran the after school program where we just worked with kids. And I also taught swim lessons and was involved in the swim lessons there.
So did she work with a team when you were there, or was it just you?
It was a combination of the small kids and teens, but a lot of my emphasis was with teens. That's where my passion really was with a lot of them. And so we ran a lot of team basketball leagues, and as well as adult basketball leagues as well.
Okay. Do you have any coworkers while you were there part-time? Like anybody, or was it just mainly you over the youth department that you work with anybody else?
I was doing just part-time. So we had had a director there, I forget her name. We had a youth director, I can't remember, Nancy Bellinger, I think her name was, and so I worked with her directly with the kid. Then we have a physical director, which was Jake Lassley, and I worked with him part-time, which was working with the sports and basketball leagues and things.
Okay. So did she encounter any problems working there in the youth department with other people or with any of the kids, or any problems or any issues that came up or anything?
Just typical, kids will be kids. And, they have to discipline them from time to time. But my thing was to mentor and keep them on the right track.
So who did the department serve? Like, who was in the department's service area? What kind of kids would come?
Basically, we served a lot of kids from the campus apartments, which was located right next door. Then you could go a little further north, kind of the Ransom Apartments, which is located right there on Indiana Avenue. I mean, not Indiana Avenue, but Martin Luther King. And just that service area is basically where we served a lot of kids from that area.
So how would you describe Fall Creek's youth membership enrollment at that time? Was it really high? A lot of kids coming in?
We had quite a few kids. I think in our basketball program, we served maybe about 75, 80 kids, which was pretty good. And just, I think we had pretty good numbers at that time.
So how would you have described the developmental direction of the YMCA at that time? How did you see it changing in the future when you were there? Did you see it staying the same or becoming different in the future?
Are you talking about in 90 when I first started, or towards the end?
When you first started, what did you think the YMCA was going to be in the future?
Well, when I first started at the Fall Creek Y in 90, I was, you know, and all, cause since I was raised in Indianapolis, mm-hmm. for a lot of years, I always heard that the Fall Creek might be closed and the wish that IU would be taking it over, just rumors mm-hmm. of that. And so that was always in the back of anyone who worked for the YMCA or who was part of the YMCA, kind of always had that in their mind, which ended up not being true, that IU didn't want any parts of it. But it was, that was just a rumor. And so we never knew what the future was. Our goal as staff was to always try to increase membership and to just keep going forward and try to impact the community and the kids that we serve and hopefully prevent that from happening. But, you know.
So let's talk about your time as residence hall director. And you started that position in 1991. So who hired you as the full-time residence hall director of Fall Creek?
Same gentleman. Ralph Christian.
Ralph Christian. And so the residence hall was 97 single resident rooms.
Yes. Basically.
So could you describe the interview process with Ralph Christian?
Well, pretty much at that time, I think what happened was Jake Lassley, who was our physical director, which was over the youth sports and all, he had resigned and took another position with the Y. So I had applied for that position Mr. Christian thought that I would be more effective with, you know, maybe with transitional with the adults, with the residents. So I didn't get that position as a physical director. They hired someone else, Randy Hogard, for that position, which did an outstanding job. And I took on the position as a residence hall director and just, you know, transitional, working with transitional people who were, some was ex-addicts, ex-offenders, some was individuals just moving to Indianapolis and transition to look for a job and needed somewhere to stay. So we had a mixture of all different kinds of people there.
Men and women
at one point. Mm-hmm. Towards the end there, towards our closing in 2000, one, I think the last 2 years we kind of eliminated the ladies, but before all that time prior to that, we had one floor, one part of the first floor mm-hmm. of the resident hall were women. But mostly men.
Mostly men. What were your goals what were your goals as the residence hall director? What did you want to do or what did you hope to accomplish in that position?
My goal with the resident hall was basically what I wanted to accomplish was just to provide safe housing for individuals and also to make an impact in their lives, hopefully turn them around, especially some of the ex-offenders and some of the ex-drug addicts, to kind of be a positive influence. We provided a lot of things for them. We had outreach programs for them as far as meals. We had counselors that come in and did monthly counseling with them. And we just provided a lot of things for them to try to, you know, to make them be a more positive citizen when they left out of there.
Were they mostly young adults or were there any?
They range from, we took them in as early as 18 years old all the way up. We had some individuals, when we closed in 2001, we had one individual that had been living there, I believe, like 15 years. So some of them just kind of get there, and some are there for 2 weeks and they move on, a couple months and they move on. Some, you know, stay longer than others.
So could she talk more about did she encounter any problems as the residence hall director? Have any issues working with any of the residents there? Like you talked about, like ex-offenders or ex-drug addicts would stay there. So did she encounter any problems or any issues?
Typical problems with being a tenant, slow up paying their rent or not paying their rent. Some of them did get assistance from the Center Township trustee, which we did have a good collaboration mm-hmm. with them. They paid their rent, and then some of them got them through organizations that provided a funding for ex-offenders and they paid. But not many problems, just the typical problems of, you know, some of them disciplinary problems, some of them was sneaking liquor in the rooms and different things like that.
Which that wasn't allowed.
No, alcohol was allowed. Mm-hmm. The different things like that. We did have some overdose a couple times, you know, which we you didn't know, you know, and we found some people deceased in rooms and different things like that.
Mm-hmm. Did she work with a team, or was it, like, did she have people under you as director working with you, or was it your...
Basically, I was the sole directorship. We did have our support staff, as far as our maid to help keep the rooms clean, janitorial staff. We had desk clerks who actually took the rent and made the transactions at the desk. But basically, as far as it was just a one man show, as far as actually.
Could you describe how the single resident rooms, or the SROs, because she described how they were furnished during your time as residence hall director?
Yes, in 1993, I believe it is, we did a major renovation to those rooms, which included all the rooms included a bed, a dresser, a mirror, you know, a chair, a desk, and then some of the rooms, I think, let's see, it was about, out of the 97 rooms, I think we had about 20 rooms that had their own bath, which was charged a little bit more, I believe. Like the ones without was $77, and I think $87 or $97 a week for the rooms that had their own bath. But we only had a limited amount of rooms that had their own bath. And then the rest of them was set up, the other 77 rooms were set up where they had to go down to the shower, the community showers.
Okay. Yeah. So just like a dorm.
Yes, yes.
So how would she describe the residence hall's rate of occupancy during your tenure? So was it a lot of people coming in, or did it fluctuate?
Yeah, we always kept at least 75% to 80%. At some point, we was some a lot of times we was full, but we never went below, even till we closed, we never went below 75-80%.
Wow. Okay.
There was always a need in the community for housing.
Right.
And I believe it still is.
So were the SROs cost effective, considering the rate of occupancy? Because you pay for all the bills with the money that everyone was bringing in, the money that the residents were bringing in. So was it cost effective? Did it make a profit, or did it run okay?
I think it ran. It didn't make a profit, but it was for good cause. And I think the reason why we end up having to probably close it in 2001 was the fact that it wasn't, you know, it needed a lot of work to really get it back up to a living, real good, comfortable living conditions, because of the wear and tear, and we just wasn't able to put the money back into it, and it just, and then as a YMCA, as a whole nationwide, it's just, you know, it's the program, residential program, was not as prominent as it was in the past, because, you know, it was. So that was one of the reasons why we needed to close that. But we closed it, I think we did it with good grace and good dignity, as far as a lot of the gentlemen that we had that lived there for a long period of time, and some of them that hadn't, they needed us to write letters of reference. We even was able to give them a little bit of some deposits on their new apartments, and we also made sure that every last one of those individuals that was there when we closed was placed somewhere else. So we definitely put a lot of emphasis to make sure that happened.
Right. And like you said, there was a need in the community that the residence halls that they served. So just to talk about the residence halls, just to give some brief information about them. They were built as part of the Fall Creek facility in April 1958 to provide segregated, low-cost housing for African Americans. According to a document prepared for a meeting between the United Way of Central Indiana and Coalition for the Homeless, the dormitories acted as, quote, a serving center of the Indiana Avenue Corridor community, close quote. So Like you said, they closed in 2001 or 2002. So on March 29th, 2002. So according to the document that I just mentioned, prepared for a meeting between United Way and the Coalition for the Homeless, the IYMCA initiated a, quote, significant marketing strategy in 1995, close quote. So this is before the close of the dormitories. So I just wanted to know, why did the IYMCA decide to improve marketing strategies for Fall Creek, or why do you think they decided to improve marketing strategies in 95?
Well, I think that they, you know, realized that there was a need for housing and we really wanted to enhance that. And that's why I think in 93 we put money back into it and put new furniture in the rooms. I think they felt that there was a real need for housing and why still at that point the YMCA of Greater Annapolis really wanted to be a part of that and providing housing for the homeless and for transitional individuals.
Did she oversee any marketing strategies? Did she advertise the Fall Creek dormitories, or was that necessary?
Oh, we had brochures, and it was kind of the word of the mouth. I think that just traditionally, like everybody knows or knew at that time that the YMCA was in place, had a residence, and it was just basically an individual would just come word of the mouth. And then with the organizations like Center Township Trustee and the agencies they work with, they just send people over to us, and yeah.
So I want to talk a few about the message from the executive director letter dated December 4th, 1997. And the executive director of the Fall Creek Branch in 1997 was Marilyn Sattler.
Yes.
Okay. So about how long has she been on Marilyn's staff at that time? Like when did she succeed Ralph Christian?
No, after Ralph Christian, yeah, I can't remember all the dates, but we had Ralph Christian was there when I, and he hired me. Mm-hmm. Then after Ralph Christian, there was, for a brief area, there was some interim exec throughout the YMCA Greater Annapolis Corporate Office, Association Office. Then they hired Andre Williams. Mm-hmm. And then after Andre Williams was there a couple years, and maybe an interim period for about a year or a few months, then Marilyn Sattler came in. And Marilyn Sattler was there, I know, from till 2000. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. How was her rapport with you and with other key players on the staff at that time? How did she?
Had a pretty good rapport. She came from us, from the YWCA, which was a little similar, but a little different at the same time. But she had a pretty good rapport with her staff, with the community as well. It was a difficult time. By that time, 97 or between 97 and 2000, that's when a lot of the rumors was really. That Fall Creek might be closed, and that's when membership was kind of low and it was kind of struggling to keep membership up. But we still did a lot of good programs during that time. The Wise Zone Choir came out, we implemented the Wise Zone Choir. A lot of good things came out of that. We had a program through our youth program called the Junior Volunteers Program that got implemented. So we just kept on rolling, but that was during a hard time when a lot of the rumors was really hitting pretty rampant.
So in the letter, she talks about her excitement over, you know, her new appointment, her future goals for the branch, and the factors which hindered Fall Creek's success. So she does talk about low membership enrollment during that time. Mm-hmm. And according to her letter, Fall Creek had the potential to, quote unquote, reinvent itself. And I just want to read a portion from her letter. So, quote, the most recent census data shows that a significant portion of the African-American community has moved to the north and east sides of Indianapolis. However, with the economic revival of this area due in part to the growth of IUPUI, the IU Medical Center, Wishart Hospital, and Methodist Hospital, the revived Madam Walker Theater, and the rebirth of new small businesses and family housing, the Fall Creek YMCA has the chance and the challenge to reinvent itself, close quote. And again, that was a section from Marilyn Sattler's message from the executive director letter. So I just wanted to know, did you agree with her at that time? Did you agree that Fall Creek had the chance to reinvent itself with all these, you know, with the revitalization of the downtown area? Did you agree with her thoughts?
Yeah, I was part of the team, and I definitely wanted to. We was doing everything that we could, and I definitely agree with it. At that point, I was excited. A new leadership, like I said, she had experience with the YWCA. I think she had, was a lawyer. Just a lot of, she brought a lot of energy to our team, and for sure, we thought that, yeah, hey, there's an opportunity for us to turn the tides there at Fall Creek.
So did residence occupancy benefit from like an increase of what she calls the young adult population of students and workers coming in downtown? Did the residence halls cater to any of those individuals? Or
we did have a few. But mostly we did have a few students that was in transition, and some people that was we have a minister here in town now, Reverend Richard Scott, who really, he was a graduate of Purdue University from Birmingham, Alabama. He went back home, wanted to come back to the Indianapolis area, and he we brought him in, and he definitely is a success story. He's been very involved with the YMCA, and he tells how the Y how gave him opportunity to stay there while he was in transition, finding a job, and he stayed about a year. So we had a lot of success stories with individuals like that that were just positive, but positive role models later on in life after they experienced the Fall Creek Y. So.
And I just want to talk about the low membership or reasons for low membership that you mentioned. So comments on the 2000 population analysis of Fall Creek service area, according to these comments, quote, the results of the population analysis shows a startling population decrease of 63% since 1960. The number of occupied housing units has declined by 54%. The percentage of residents 65 and older has increased from 12% to 17%, close quote. So these are some kind of demographic numbers for the service area surrounding Fall Creek by 2000. And the demographic shift can be attributed to IUPUI's expansion, to the construction of I-465 and I-65, and the intra-district busing order. Or the intra-district busing of Black children to outlying districts following U.S. District Court Judge S.U. Dillon's 1971 mandate. So this was some of the context that was going on, kind of losing housing units and losing demographics, basically by the time Marilyn Sadler took over. So, but you said that you and the team and Marilyn Sadler were very excited about Fall Creek's future and that you thought it would reinvent it. So.
Yeah, we was at least making all the effort that we could to do with what we had to work with, and like you said, with the demographics had changed, but we still was trying to work with the youth in the community, trying to do some more things with our seniors, senior, which was mostly was still the demographic that was still there in the Ramson Place area where they built their own homes, had a lot of history there, and we did a lot of things. We implemented a program called the Breakfast Club to try to help get the seniors more involved.
Okay, so that was a senior. So I concluded from newspaper articles that the close of Fall Creek's 97-room residence section on March 29, 2002 was the first major controversy concerning the Fall Creek Y. So I wanted to know, why do you think Metro decided to close Fall Creek's dormitories? I have the information in the statistical reports, but I just wanted to hear your viewpoint or your thoughts on why Metro decided to close Fall Creek or the Fall Creek dormitories. So,
the decision was made, and it got some resistance from the community, definitely because it felt that it was taking away some more housing opportunity for the homeless. But I think the fact that the YMCA of Greater Indianapolis felt that they couldn't wasn't generating the funding to put back into it to make that program real effective. And like I said, after that, we had the renovation in 1993, I think. Mm-hmm. And then so 10 years later, the building with all the people using it, it was beginning to deteriorate, and we needed a lot of work to be done to it to really make that a place that would be safe and clean and for housing. So I think that was one of the reasons. And
so when did she know about their decision to close the dormitories? Like when did you? A couple of, did she know before, of course, like the residents did?
Definitely we wanted to give adequate time. I think we gave us 30 or 60 days in advance after the decision we made. And that's when me and my staff, and along with collaboration with the staff of the YMCA Greater Indianapolis and Center Township and different agencies, took upon herself to try to make sure that we had a good transition and all the residents, the remaining residents, was placed. Mm-hmm. And we did it in a good and gracious fashion. Mm-hmm. And I think we worked hard and did accomplish that. Mm-hmm. You know, but it was a sad day because the residence hall was a big part of the Fall Creek Y for a lot of years.
So dormitory residents were alerted of the YMCA Executive Committee's decision to close the dormitories in a statement dated January 31st, 2002. And in the statement, the Metropolitan Department explains that the dormitory section was, quote, inadequate to meet the needs of the community, close quote, and that renovation wouldn't be cost effective due to its infrastructure, which you talked about how you couldn't really renovate the building anymore. And the statement also said that the board would rechannel resources that would have been used to renovate the dorms to programming. So what did the remaining residents have to say about Metro's January 31st notice? How did they react to it when you disseminated the notice? What were their feelings? What did they say to you, person? No.
I've seen it get more resistance from the community as a whole, and some of the articles that was put in the newspaper, more so than we did with the residents. Because I met individual with all the residents and kind of assured them that whatever help they needed, some of them, like I said, had records and couldn't really have good. Needed someone to write a letter of recommendation for them to get other housing and all that. So I made a point, I brought in other people to come in and talk with them and look, see if they had other housing opportunities and different things. So like I said, I think we did everything we could to make them comfortable. So I didn't get a lot of resistance. Some of the ones that was there for a lot of years, like I said, one individual there was about 15 years, it was gonna be a transition because he was in the comfort zone. All in all, didn't get much resistance from the residents, as long as we assured them that we was going to do everything we could so that they wouldn't go back out into the streets and without a home. Mm-hmm. And,
so what other places were you able to move them into?
Center Township trustee placed them in different places. Okay. We was able, some of them found the apartments that they was interested in that we made their first month deposit and wrote them a reference letter. The Blue Triangle, which was located on Pennsylvania, which was ran by Partner in Housing, we placed quite a few at that location, which was a SOR also too.
So did you receive recognition for your role in the process of, helping the remaining residents to move out of the dorms? Did you receive kind of recognition, any kind of,
Not really, and I wasn't really looking for some. I think the association office, Mr. Norris Line, we would thank me and he acknowledged that I did a good job in making the transition go smooth. But I wasn't really looking for any recognition. My recognition is now, from time to time, I see residents that was involved in that transition, and even before that they'll see me and they say, thank you for being a part of my life. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to stay at the Y. Thanks for staying on me and pushing me in the right direction. So those are the things that I get out of the self-gratification out of that, of just seeing where I made a difference in someone's lives.
Okay. And Norris Lineweaver was the president and CEO of the Greater Indianapolis YMCA between 1994 and 2005, just for the record. So let's talk about your time as acting branch director. And this was between 2000 and 2003. Right? Mm-hmm. So before we talk about Fall Creek's programs and low adult membership enrollment, let's just talk about the position, the acting branch director position in general and in the light of an organizational study. So Fall Creek's executive directorship had a high turnover rate. There was a new person in the position about four times between 1992 and 2000. So why do you think that this position had a high turnover rate, that executive directorship position over Fall Creek?
In some cases, I think I know Mr. Christian wanted to move back to New York, where he was originally from and where he spent a lot of his time. Andre Williams and Marilyn Sattler, I think it was just a lot of opportunities to move on later. Marilyn, I believe, went on to Jordan YMCA after she left. I don't know. I don't know why the turnover was. I think it was just that, I don't know. That's a tough question because I wasn't, you know, I never really asked them that question, why did they move on or whatever. But I know it was a challenging position, you know, trying to get membership up and trying to reinvent the wheel like Marilyn has stated that she wanted to try to do. And it just was a challenge. So it could have been some frustrations on their part. I really don't know. I never really did an interview with them to ask them why they move on or whatever. But.
So according to Marilyn Sattler's 1997 staff letter and a 1999 organizational study on the Fall Creek branch, staffing issues were the main hindrance to Fall Creek's growth, according to those two sources. So the 1999 organizational study was completed by John Bond. And Bond was a program director with the Hoosier Bull chapter of the North American Fellowship of YMCA Retirees, or NAFYR. So did you know John Bond when he was studying the YMCA, when he was completing this organizational study?
I think I remember when he was doing that.
Yeah. Okay. Did he talk to other members? Did he talk to you when he was completing his study of the branch?
I believe he did. I believe I did talk with Mr. Bond.
Does she agree with what he found out about the branch, or does she agree with his findings and suggestions?
Yeah, he said staff issues. I think the staffing issues was more of just being able to afford staffing. We was working with kind of a skeleton staff. We didn't, most branches, you know, had aquatic directors for each program, you had a youth director, residents, like the position that I was holding prior. I was a resident director, and also I was a director of building services. I was in charge of all the janitorial staff and the whole. So most of the positions had to hold two or three positions, because doing a lot of responsibility for one person. You know, so I think that's what the issue was, but it was because of funding and because of membership, and you really couldn't put that money into it. And we was running, we ran a lot of those years between $350,000 to $500,000 deficit. So,
So let's talk about your tenure as acting branch director. So why did you decide to become the branch director in 2000? Why did she want that position?
Well, it was offered to me. That was after Marilyn Sattler. It was kind of at that point, in 2000 was when the announcement, the announcement wasn't made, but it was kind of pretty clear that Fall Creek was going to go in another direction, either to close or something was going to happen. Marilyn Sattler took a position with the Jordan YMCA. I was asked by Mr. Lion Weaver and Michelle Goodrich's time, would I fill the gap as an interim? What, you know, we say the executive director, but the actual title was I was the director of operation, with director of operations director at the at the Fall Creek Y for those 3 years. Was asked could I would I take that position and to kind of bridge the gap and the work to decide what's going to happen in the future of Fall Creek. And I was willing to do so because I had a big passion for Fall Creek YMCA, built a rapport with the community, just really liked my job, liked, you know, like I said, the gratification of helping youth and helping residents. And so I wanted to do whatever I could do to keep the Fall Creek YMCA legacy alive and to, you know, keep it functioning.
Mm-hmm. But what do you mean by bridge the gap? Is that what Lion Weaver and Goodwish wanted you to do with the branch? What do you mean by like bridge the gap?
Bridge the gap as far as with the community, continue to keep the staff at an upbeat, keep the community at an upbeat that, hey, Fall Creek is still functioning and you know, and not to really fall into the rumors that Fall Creek might be closing, because they, at that time they hadn't decided, but they knew something, you know. Mm-hmm. And so just to keep the morale up with staff, that was more important than anything. Keep morale up, and keep on functioning, and keep the community, keep programs going the best we could.
Mm-hmm. I can remember in their pre-interview you talked about kind of fulfilling a peacekeeper position during that time. So when you talk about bridging the gap, did you also mean like kind of bridging the gap between the Y and the Metro branch, or?
Yeah.
Just keeping up.
Yeah, and I think that was more towards the end when in 2003 when it was actually announced that the Y was going to close. At that point, mm-hmm. then I was kind of, sometime I felt kind of in an awkward position, but in a good position that I could handle. I felt like, you know, I felt like I had to be kind of loyal to the community which I serve and which I grew up in. But also, I had to be loyal to the YMCA of Greater Indianapolis, who signed my paycheck and who put me in this position to serve this position. So, and you know, with the media kind of made it like a, you know, why against the community thing. And so I was kind of in the middle, but I enjoyed it. It didn't, well, I can't say enjoy is not the word, but I mean, I was willing to accept that responsibility, and I did the best I could, and it turned out okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So what did you do differently than Marilyn as acting executive director?
I don't think I did anything much different, because at that point, like I said, it was at, you know, we didn't know which direction we was going with the Fall Creek. All I know that we needed to continue to do what we was doing, and if we could do anything to enhance better, we would. I know, I think our Y-Zone choir grew. We was able to make some, they went over to Prague. They opened for the YMCA of the USA General Assembly. Did a lot of great things. I think our youth volunteer program grew, where we showed it young kids how to write checks, how to, you know, just life skills was what that program was more for middle school kids under the leadership of Chris Tolliver. And so we did, I think we did some good positive things regardless of the fact that the exterior of the community was, you know, thinking that we was gonna close and all that. We continued to still run our programs. We still had our before and after school programs. We had a collaboration with IPS. I think we was in like 7 or 8 IPS schools.
So does she work with Jean Ely? E-L-Y.
Yeah, she was the board chair during that last year, mm-hmm. of our last few months of YMCA tenure at the Fall Creek.
Mm-hmm. Did she work with her, kind of collaborate with her in any way? I know that She eventually sent a Declaration of Independence letter to the Greater Indianapolis Y. So I know that she was against the closing. So did she work with her to, you know, I guess during the last months or talk with her some?
Yes, I worked with Ms. Eli and she, and you know, the board and like I said, the community, and we had community people like Jocelyn Tandy, Jocelyn Dunde, I think her name was, that was kind of vocal at that time to try to keep it open. And, you know, it was just, I worked, like I said, I worked with the community, I worked with our board, I worked with the YMCA Greater Indianapolis, I did whatever I had to do to try to keep it. And my goal was to try to keep the YMCA open as well. I didn't want to see it close, and no one wanted to see it close. And because it had so much history, it helped so many kids, it helped so many families. It was a pillar stone for the community, for the Black community. It had a lot of history, so nobody wanted to close. So I did everything I could to provide information. Try to go out in the community to let individuals know to come by your membership at the Fall Creek Y. So, you know, even though we know that you living out now in Carmel and Fishers and what have you, but if you buy your membership with the Fall Creek Y, that will give our numbers, our figures, and you can still use those YMCAs in your community, but bring your money back to the Fall Creek Y. So we did all that, and our board members tried to do that, but it just didn't work. But we did everything we could to try.
So you talked about Fall Creek's net deficit, and the net deficit increased from $434,159 in 2000 to $472,958 in 2001. It did drop to $350,790 in 2002. So according to a Reporter article dated November 17, 2000, you mainly attributed Fall Creek's deficit to, quote, the lack of adult membership, close quote. So, that's true.
Yes, adult membership, and that's what I was alluding to earlier, that we try to, you know, get African Americans and individuals to buy memberships at the Fall Creek, purchase them at the Fall Creek, so that it would go into our revenue. And you know, the one thing with the Y, that you was able to use any YMCA in the city, but but you had to, if you could buy your membership at the Fall Creek. So that was where we was lacking adult membership, and it was because of the demographics, because a lot of people, a lot of our African American individuals who could really afford the rates for the YMCA had moved out in Pike Township and out in Fishers and out in Ouser, because a lot of our members that we still were serving was financial assistance, and we was giving out quite a bit of financial assistance. I can't remember, but I know we was giving over $200,000 worth of financial assistance for our programs, for youth programs, and even some of the memberships.
So did Fall Creek have any competition with other churches or community centers that offered YMCA-type services to adults? Did you compete with anybody else nearby, or you were the only?
I think we was the only family center, but then you had LA Fitness, and you had a lot of other, you had NIFs, and you had a lot of other fitness centers around the community. But as far as, you had a lot of the Indy Park for the kids. You know, we had I can't remember all the parks, but had I can't think of some of the parks that was in the area that provided programs for some of the kids and stuff. But YMCA, basically, we was a family, you know, and we did provide some family programming that, you know, the LA Fitness and some of the other fitness gyms couldn't. So that was what set us apart. But adult membership is where it is, because we had a lot of kid programs, a lot of kid, we still continue our kid programs, and we was funded, like I said, through CCDF for our before and after school programs and stuff like that. But the adult membership is what carry any YMCA, and what really is the meat of the revenue is paying adults.
Paying adults.
Yeah.
So you talk about these issues concerning low adult membership in your report that was titled Changing Communities, and you submitted the report to the YMCA of the USA 2002 Executive Development Program on June 30th. First of all, what was the Executive Development Program?
That was a program just to provide me with some skill sets to carry on as an executive director and to maybe move on with my future in the Y. It was a leadership program.
Leadership program.
Yeah, and so we was asked to write different essays and you know, interact with other up and coming executive directors and program directors.
So who read the report? Who did you submit it to? Or who was your, who were you writing for?
Writing, it was just writing to, I forget who our leader was for that class, but it was some people that was CEOs and of different YMCAs in the USA, and they helped lead that. It was I believe it was like a six month, might have been a year, and we went back and forth to Illinois for a weekend visit, maybe four or five times, and then we listened to different leaders of the YMCA of the USA, and just gave us impact of their experiences being executive directors, and so just a lot of input. Then we was asked to write essays. We read different various books on leadership skills, and then we had to write essays on it. And that was that particular one was just kind of talking about our experience at our particular branch.
So in the report, you stated that in order to, quote, have an impact in the near downtown community, the Fall Creek branch must implement more creative programs that will attract the adult commuter population that has greatly increased as a result of several businesses moving in the near downtown area, close quote. So how did you decide which services will appeal to adults, would attract commuter adults? Or did you implement new services at Fall Creek Y that would attract adults?
Yeah, I knew that, like I said, adult membership, paying adults was going to be the key to our success. Youth would come, and you know, you had programs that would help fund the youth program, but we needed paying adults. And so we try to increase our aerobics class and you know, try to update some of the aerobics, some of the upcoming aerobics styles and methods that they had. We try to do that. Just different things that we thought that would be more appealing to adults that would bring them in.
Right. So. And I think at one point you offered free massages or, you know, did different kind of.
We did massages. We did some collaboration with, I think, Ivy Tech, which had our students come over and do free massages and, you know, whatever we could to do to try to bring in adults.
Bring in adults. Yeah. How did those strategies work out for me?
It helped a little bit, but not enough. Not the numbers that we needed. You might have that in your report. I think we only had like 700 some adult memberships, and we needed or we needed that many to actually get to the break even point that would keep the Y open, and we never did get to that point.
Like the goal was like 1,500 memberships.
Yeah.
So then, was it growing before the close, or was it?
It was kind of staying kind of level, and then it picked up just a little bit when we was trying to make those final push efforts, but not enough to do what we needed.
So did you oversee any marketing strategies to attract people to the wild? Did you do like television, radio ads, different things like that to, you know?
Yeah, we did. We got on, they had Willie Frank Middlebrook, had a show on WTLC, well, through WTLC AM. We went on there and kind of tried to talk to African American communities to come back to the Fall Creek Y and support the Fall Creek Y, mm-hmm. if you can. And we had articles in the Recorder and different things that we try to do to, you know, generate the interest. But at that point, I don't know if the community was burnt out or just wasn't willing to give us the support we needed to keep it open as far as coming in and buying and purchasing memberships.
So you specifically targeted the Black community?
Targeted the Black community, and also we was marketing to everyone to try to get the support. But I think one of the things, and that was the same way with the residents, I think it was the fact that we was at a landlock at also at the Fall Creek Y, that you couldn't really renovate or really expand it. And I think really to make that a more appealing building, you was definitely gonna have to do some major renovation and some expansion, and the way where it was located at, and that was another issue. I think it was gonna take a lot of money to put back into it to make it appealing of a YMCA to bring people back, because you had at that point Fisher's was built, and they had renovated after the tornado, renovated Baxter Y, and it was, and a lot of the YMCAs was more appealing, more fitness equipment, mm-hmm. bigger gyms, bigger, locker rooms, and just and the Y, that was built in 1958-59, mm-hmm. Fall Creek was, and it had an old look to it, and it needs some renovation, but it was gonna take a lot of money, and then it's gonna take a lot of support, and I think the YMCA of Greater Annapolis and the board of the YMCA just didn't feel that it was getting the financial support that it would need to put back into it to make it appealing, and which was sad, it didn't have that we couldn't do that, because definitely, like I said, all of us that was staff and all of us that was the community and all of us that was involved really wanted to see the Fall Creek still be there, because they had so much history.
Right.
1 minute.
Okay. Just gonna ask one more question. In the pre-interview, you talked about how a lot of individuals purchase memberships from Baxter, Fisher's, and other YMCA branches in the areas where they lived, even though they frequented the Fall Creek branch downtown. So could you talk more about how you tried to reverse that?
Yeah, a lot of people, because they worked in the downtown area, they came and used the Fall Creek on their lunch break or on their way home from work. But their membership, they lived out in Fisher's, they lived out in the south part of Indiana and different places. But the Fall Creek was convenient because that was a downtown near where they work. Mm-hmm. So we tried to to convert that or change that, to say, hey, you're here quite a bit. You're using our facility. Once you transfer your membership here, or transfer it here, so that we can get credit. But I don't know. And we had to be kind of discreet on how we did that. You didn't want to make no pressure no one or something. So you to do that. So it just. People just kind of felt comfortable doing what they was doing, and they enjoyed the Y and enjoyed coming to the Fall Creek. I definitely place emphasis to our staff to continue to make sure that you're friendly and inviting to whoever comes to the Y, and we definitely took a lot of pride in that. Mm-hmm. Just making whoever came to our YMCA feel welcome and provide a good service for them.
So we're going to take just a quick 5 minute break, and when we come back, we're just going to talk about adult membership at the Y.
Okay. Mm-hmm.